It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This week, Pittsburgh City Council will be voting on legislation written in response to the tragic death of Cassandra Wade on December 31st, 2012. Action United is a women's focus group that presented Cassandra's Law to the Pittsburgh City Council. Cassandra was a secretary for Action United. Although police responded to Cassandra's 911 call, they left when a man came to the window and told them that everything was all right. The 33-year-old Ms. Wade was found dead in her Lowell Street home nearly a day after two Pittsburgh police officers responded to her 911 call. The proposed legislation would impact the way police respond to domestic violence calls. I'm joined now in Studio A by Mary Ellen Deckard, Campaign and Development Director for Action United. Mary Ellen Deckard, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Also with us is Cheryl Regan, President and CEO of the Women's Center and Shelter. Cheryl Regan, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us on the air today.
If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What new laws do you hope to see come out of the Cassandra Wade case? 412-246-2002. Mary Ellen Deckard, let's start with you. Before we get into a discussion of the circumstances surrounding Cassandra Wade's death, let's talk about the kind of person that she was. I mentioned that she worked for you at Action United, so you knew her. What was Cassandra Wade like?
Cassandra was a bright young lady who was working very hard to improve her life situation. She had a 10-year-old son and was a very thoughtful parent who was always trying to figure out what the best things to do for her son was, and always working towards improving their lives.
And as you mentioned, she left behind a 10-year-old son. And who was looking after that young man?
His grandmother, Miss Sharon Jordan, who tomorrow will be with us at City Council. And also, he'll be there too. Yesterday, I got a text from his grandmother telling me that he made straight A's on his report card.
When Cassandra Wade called 911 this past New Year's Eve, what happened? How, as far as we know, did the police respond?
At first, Ms. Wade's grandmother called me on the phone and said, could you go over there because she didn't come pick her son up, and I don't know what to do because she's never done that before, ever, and it's just out of character. So could you go over there and see what's going on over there? And, you know, I thought this is probably not the right role for me, so I called 911 and said, I think you better send somebody over there. Ms. Wade's very worried about her daughter, and, you know, there's a lot of problems, so I think you should go over there. She escaped a domestic abuse situation, and it's dangerous. At first, they didn't want to send anybody and said that Ms. Wade's mother would have to come in from Aliquippa to file some missing persons report after 24 hours because Cassandra was an adult. And I asked them to please have a woman police officer call me on the phone. About 20 minutes later, a woman police officer called me on the phone, and I talked to her and told her all the things that I had told the other police officer, and I don't know what happened, but she said, you have given me enough information to take action. And I said, what action? And she said, we can't tell you. That's when they broke in and they found out. I don't know exactly what happened during the police responding to Cassandra's call because I wasn't there. But I do know that the bureaucracy doesn't move fast enough. And, the reports are that a man told the police that everything was okay and that
they were responding. They were responding to her call. Cassandra Wade had called 911. She spoke in hushed tones. She did not want to alarm her boyfriend.
Right. That's what,
by all accounts, she did not want him to know that she was calling the police. They show up. He says everything's fine. They go away, and later she's found dead.
Right. What but should if the you've missed a part, a very important part of that, in that the 911 dispatcher reported a scuffle, and then the phone was disconnected.
After her call.
Right. The police who responded, we know today, we didn't know at the time, but we know today they did know that that had happened.
What should the police, based on what we now know, what should the police who responded to her call have done differently?
I'm not a police officer, and it's very hard for me to determine that. And I think probably for those police officers, it may have also been hard for them to determine that. That's why I really feel that there should be a police policy that is a law, that is a way that they must respond so that none of this can happen, because in the heat of the moment, everybody responds differently. Nobody responds the same in the heat of the moment. They were in the situation and I wasn't. So I don't want to second guess those officers, but I would like our city council to pass a law that says that whenever you respond to any 911 call, domestic violence or not, you then request to speak to the person that called 911. That would have saved Cassandra's life.
Cheryl Regan, how will the attention drawn to this case lead to new laws?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think the outrage that the people in the city of Pittsburgh, as well as those who serve in political office, is evident by the fact that so many have come together to start talking again after a crisis about what needs to be done. There is legislation that is being proposed that will be coming up tomorrow to look at by City Council, that was brought up last week by City Council, to institute some new policies for the police, but not the ones that Mary Ellen just described. However, they are what we're advocating for is that a working panel of domestic violence individuals be convened by the mayor and city council, with also someone from the police department and someone from the prosecutor's office, where we can be exploring what are best practices for police officers in other cities that we can bring to Pittsburgh.
And why did you draw up the legislation the way that you did?
Well, actually, it was Councilman Burgess who brought this legislation to all of us. We didn't bring it to him. So he was already working on what's called the Maryland Lethality Assessment Model, which is a program that's being used in the entire state of Maryland. And it's a collaboration between researchers and the state police that have shown effectiveness in reducing homicides and intimate partner violence. That was the legislation that was originally brought before a working group that was convened. And we came up with a few other things that we wanted to see, but it's a beginning. It's not the end.
Ladies, either Cheryl Regan or Mary Ellen Deckard, what are the low to moderate income women of Pittsburgh who have experienced domestic violence? What are they telling you needs to be done?
So that would be a question for me. First, I want to say that you know, we are not saying that the legislation that the working group has proposed is bad legislation. In fact, we think it's good, and we also are advocating for its passage.
But you think it could go further? You think it could go further?
We think that there needs to be a separate piece of legislation that directly deals with 911 responses and in the city of Pittsburgh, and only 911 responses in the city of Pittsburgh without any amendments at all, a one-sentence piece of information that we will call Cassandra's Law. When this happened, we had a vigil in our community, and there were a few hundred people there that showed up. And the women, at that point, I announced that we were going to convene a group of low and moderate income women who had experienced domestic violence, and that those women were going to become a working group to present legislation to City Council that would address what happened to Cassandra and also what happened to them when they received, when they called and received a 911 response from police over the course of the abuse that they experienced in their own personal lives. So your question was, what did they recommend?
Yeah, what did they say to you?
And what they most recommend is that Cassandra's Law be passed. And again, that's a requirement for all emergency responders to actually respond to the person who called 911. We think this is a no-brainer. And we think it's important that it get legislated, because even though it seems to be policy, as Apala said, that the police followed policy.
You're talking about the district attorney.
District Attorney Apala. He said publicly that the police did follow policy.
So if they followed the policy and it didn't work, then the policy needs to be changed. There's a heated debate in city council about this, and I want to get into that, but we need to take a break. It's Essential Pittsburgh. We're talking about the Cassandra Wade case and proposed city council legislation that would impact the way police respond to domestic violence calls. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about the Cassandra Wade case and proposed city council legislation that would impact the way police respond to domestic violence calls in Pittsburgh. With me in Studio A, Mary Ellen Deckard, Campaign and Development Director for Action United, and Cheryl Regan, President and CEO of the Women's Center. If you would like to join the conversation, call us at 412-246-2002. We'd like to hear from you, 412-246-2002. Our email address, essspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What new laws do you hope to see come out of the Cassandra Wade case? What do you think needs to be done? How can police procedure be improved? 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002, the number to call to join the conversation. After a heated debate last week, the Pittsburgh City Council is looking at this issue from a couple of different angles. Cheryl Regan, explain what's going on here and explain how this devolved somewhat from a discussion into a shouting match in the City Hall chambers.
I was there and sitting at the table with City Council, and I was prepared to talk about the new legislation that was being that had been worked on by the working group and was being presented that day to City Council, which had to do with the establishment of an advisory board and the authorizing that the Maryland lethality assessment model be used by the Pittsburgh police. It wasn't until 20 minutes into the discussion with City Council that I realized that the legislation that they were talking about and had in front of them had nothing to do with the legislation that I had been working on. I had not been given a piece of paper that had been given to all City Council members at the beginning of the meeting, and at that point asked for it. When I saw it, I was shocked. And some of the other City Council members were also shocked when they realized that what they had in front of them was an amendment to an ordinance that had been passed in 2007, which had to do not with responding to calls by domestic violence victims, but by police involvement with domestic violence. And the amendment that was before City Council last week had to do with rescinding all the legislation and the language that we had worked so hard on in 2007, which established a zero tolerance model and holding police officers to a higher standard of upholding the law, because to hit your intimate partner is breaking the law. When we discovered that that's what was on the table, that we were being asked to rescind that language in that legislation, people became very upset and felt like they had been duped. And that's why a week was put on to bring this back into light and to revisit the discussion today. It became very heated and very political.
And the zero tolerance, basically, with regard to police officers, if they are found guilty of domestic violence, they would be terminated.
Fine. Terminated from their job.
But apparently there's some policy that when a city employee is terminated, that makes it sort of difficult to legislate that.
One of the things that was said, that because that's a policy for the police but not for any of the other employees of the city, that has come under and been hard to defend when they went to arbitration, and I believe they went once. So they changed the language. The problem that everybody has is that they changed the language and never involved anybody in the discussion about why they were changing the language and how it might be changed. And so it was a group of about 50 activists working with city council that created that legislation. And to just put it out there without anybody having a chance to even know this was coming up to be looked at created outrage. And this is not the openness and transparency that we had been promised in doing this work.
And this would be a really good time to mention that we attempted to contact Councilman Burgess for this discussion, and his office did not respond. So what is going to happen going forward?
Well, the working group met again yesterday, Monday, and our recommendation to City Council tomorrow is that the amendment that was put on the table last week to rescind the 2007 language around zero tolerance for police officers be removed, but that we still support the two pieces of legislation that would further the city in its work around domestic violence, and that's the establishment of an advisory panel and bringing the Maryland lethality. I don't know if it's become too political to be able to separate those two with a clean vote or whether we'll have to hold it for a while, and that's what will be determined tomorrow.
And Mary Ellen Deckard, what do you think of this approach?
I think it's the reason that some city council people are arguing that you can't legislate police policy because what they don't want is for city council to be setting laws that police need to put in their policy that limits officer discretion. But sometimes officer discretion, as I said before, is something that's done in the heat of the moment and you know, it just feels to me like some things really should be written into law and solid so that we can trust. I mean, I want to trust as a woman if I am abused and I call 911. I want to trust. I want to know that the police officer that knocks on my door and says, "Did you call 911?" is not an abuser of his in his own home, in his own family. Because if he is, he's going to support my husband who just beat the heck out of me. I just cannot even understand why anybody would want to repeal that. Doug Shields, former Councilman Doug Shields, came to City Council today, and he said that not having that law in place opens the door for huge lawsuits when there is a domestic violence issue, and that we need to protect our city and our taxpayer dollars from, you know, being spent in this way. And he said that because it's very hard to actually terminate an officer, even though the law says terminate an officer, what it really does is it catches them before they commit a crime, because there's steps that lead up to that. It's not just suddenly we find out he hit his wife and so we fire him. There are steps that actually lead up to and places where you could prevent
where someone would be identified as a potential abuser.
Right, and could get help way before that, written into this law. So it doesn't make any sense that we would repeal it because it's hard to defend. That is the consequence of allowing a person who commits domestic abuse to respond to domestic abuse calls, right? The consequence would be the city would get sued and it would hurt us, and that's why we wouldn't break the law in the first place. I think sometimes we need consequences, not just for the individuals out there that the police are watching over, but also for the police themselves.
And that's Mary Ellen Deckard. And Cheryl Regan is also with us here in Essential Pittsburgh Studio A. If you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Still plenty of time for you to join the conversation. We want to hear from you. What should the policy be? How should the city of Pittsburgh and the police handle 911 calls and respond to domestic violence? What is, ladies, the model policy here as far as you're concerned?
which model policy. There are several.
So if what do you think would be the if you were able to craft this legislation in the exact way that you would want to word it to cover all of the concerns that you have, what would you do? How would it look?
Well, the thing that we would do is to keep the original 2007 ordinance exactly as it is and add that the police will be, I forget the exact wording in the one piece of legislation, but that it is about always looking for victim safety and best practices in the field. And that's where the advisory panel of people in the city who work on these issues can come together and look at what other cities are doing. When City Council created the legislation around police involved in domestic violence in the 2007 legislation, they looked at other models, other cities, but then they created something even better, and that became a model policy. In 2009, City Council, with the help of another group of people coming together, created one of the best policies for all employees working in the city of Pittsburgh who are either victims or perpetrators of domestic violence. And so the legislation that's before them now will help continue furthering, but it adds legislation that would require best practices going forward, because who knows what's going to be available 2 years from now.
City Councilman Bill Peduto says that we have to address this issue from a gun violence standpoint, that there needs to be a dialogue here regarding gun violence and gun legislation. What about that?
Well, definitely we need to start having that conversation as well. There are some who believe that, as you know, that we all need to have guns to protect ourselves. And some people take the stand that women need to have guns to protect themselves. But the evidence show that more women are hurt with a gun or killed with a gun when they start out having the gun. So it's an important discussion to have. We shouldn't react without having that discussion, and we should have all the facts in front of us before we make the final decision for what should be done in the city of Pittsburgh.
One of the recommendations of the women was that if a man is, if a woman gets a PFA, and
a PFA is
protection from abuse order, which requires that the abuser stay away from the woman. Basically, and one of our women brought up this in the meeting that if he has a gun, if he owns a gun, and she gets a PFA because he's abusing her, then that gun should be turned over to officials until such time as he completes whatever program he needs to complete, or she's not in the house, or whatever the resolution is, you know, not to take away his right to have that gun, but to temporarily have him, you know, we put the gun in a lockbox until he's got better control of his behavior. And I thought that was a pretty good suggestion. I want to say that Wednesday, tomorrow, we're putting together a Women's Day of Action, and we'd like women to come to City Council around 9:30 in the morning and just spend the day with us. There are many activities that we're going to be doing, and we'd really like to have a lot of support to change some of the laws. We want to support the law that's being introduced, provided it is introduced with no amendments and it doesn't touch the 2007 legislation.
Does it look as though that will happen?
Well, I went to a meeting yesterday, and they were, everybody agreed that there would be no surprises, and they have emailed out to the working group the legislation that they say is going to be introduced tomorrow. I am really hoping that this is the same legislation that gets introduced tomorrow. If it's not, well, a lot of women should be at City Council either way to either support it or to speak their mind.
Cheryl, you want to jump in?
I just wanted to say last week when I was sitting at the table with City Council and realized that the 2007 legislation was up for amendment, I said that I could no longer support the legislation at the table, and that if they continued in that discussion, that City Council would be packed with a lot of angry women. And so we really want to encourage women and men, everybody that care about this issue, to show up, even though it looks like it's going to be okay tomorrow. But we need to show a force of people that really are concerned about this issue and that will turn out so that politicians know we're there and we vote.
And we will not be divided, not by race, not by class, or anything else.
Do you get the sense that people in Pittsburgh, and women in particular, are getting behind you and what you're proposing on this issue?
Yes.
Is there momentum building?
I have not heard from one woman at all that we shouldn't be doing this. In fact, I've been applauded for the work that I'm doing on this. Tomorrow, if you come, you will get to hear Ms. Sharon Jordan, Cassandra's mother, speak at City Council. You will get to see her for the first time in her life lead a press conference. A woman who, you know, was just a neighborhood woman, but who now is a leader fighting for changes on domestic violence issues and who has lost her daughter. Come hear her. Stand with her in solidarity.
Mary Ellen Deckard, Campaign and Development Director for Action United, and Cheryl Regan, President and CEO of the Women's Center. Thanks to you both for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris begins a two-part series on starting a business. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.